Greetings, mortals and others. I'm Dick Terhune, the voice from hell. Walk with me into the marketing morgue. It seems that we've come nearly to the end of this journey, you and I, for this is the last episode of the marketing morgue on Hauntcast. So in the few remaining minutes we have left together, instead of telling you what you should do, here's something you should not. Last month, we talked about branding your haunt, identifying and establishing the relationship between your haunted attraction and your customer. Having done that, it is very important that, in the face of competition, you do not abandon your brand. I think of Warren Buffett, who says that in every business, there are three I's: the innovators, the imitators, and the idiots. The innovators are the ones who put all the pieces together first, take a chance, make a bold statement, and rock the market. The imitators see that there are unserved chunks of the same market up for grabs, so they tweak what the innovators did and get a piece for themselves, maybe even improve on what the innovators did, perhaps to greater success. The idiots are the ones who think they can do what the innovators and the imitators did, simply looking to make a buck. And they ultimately fail. Case in point. I have a client who shall remain nameless, an innovator with a really great haunted attraction in a highly visible, high-traffic location. Thing is, about 30 minutes up the road is one of the most well-known brand-name A-list scream parks in the country. Now, my client only has a fraction of his competitor's ad budget. So a couple years ago, my guy brings in a new business partner who finances and takes control of the marketing. His first move? Change the long-established name of my client's haunt so that it's almost identical to his competitor's. Does that really sound like a good idea to you if you're trying to establish your own brand? Do you think that people in your market are so stupid that if you try the same thing, changing the name of your haunt to an almost exact duplicate of your nearest competitor's name, they wouldn't know the difference? What do you think the results of that move were? Disastrous. It was a terrible year for my client. The following season, in another commercial campaign, again by the partner, he took a swipe at the competitor's slogan by including the competitor's slogan in his own commercial. Seriously, this guy practically did everything but provide shuttle service to take his customers out of the queue and straight to the guy he was competing with. This is one situation with all three eyes: an innovator, followed by an imitator who was also an idiot. So, what to do in a case like this? There's only one thing you can do. Be the unique attraction that you are, and advertise yourself that way. Instead of trying to take the other guy's piece of the pie, make your own damn pie. Trying to tear down the other guy is not going to hurt him nearly as much as you want it to, and it's going to hurt you more. Do your job. Identify what your competitors are not doing, what part of the market they are not serving or not serving well, then stand on your strengths that address the needs and wants of your target audience. In the case of this very client I've been talking about, with the marketing partner out the door, I produced a set of commercials that identified and addressed those needs, wants, and unique strengths. The result? Attendance increased by 200%. In one season. The three I's also apply to the elements of your attraction. The first guy who came up with zombie paintball was a genius, but if everybody in your market starts doing zombie paintball, it's going to burn out pretty fast. So if you're not the first one doing zombie paintball in your market, do something else. Your uniqueness brands you. If your customers are going to all the haunts in your market and seeing the same things, guess what? They'll quickly decide that haunted houses are boring, and they won't spend money on them, any of them, anymore. But if you are constantly upping your game, working the story, being innovative, and branding yourself as such, they will never perceive you as boring. And so, we close the door for the last time on the marketing morgue. but I am always here to rip further into the guts of haunt advertising and probe the most effective ways to market and promote your haunted attraction. To reach me with your questions, comments, and success stories, and to find out where I'll be speaking next, like Voice from Hell on Facebook. I'm Dick Terhune. Farewell, mortals.
Hey, Dick!
Yes?
I'm sorry, I just couldn't help intruding on your segment.
You're stepping on my moment.
I know, you were doing your swan song, and here I am to screw it all up. I am so sorry.
God's sake.
So, what started the voiceover business, and how long have you been in it?
I've been doing voiceover essentially since I was like 15, 16. So, yeah, you know, 2 years now. And, you didn't even budge on that one. You didn't even budge when I said that.
I was like, all right, I'm just going to
let that go. That's okay. I love you.
I love you. It's our last episode. I didn't want to crush you or anything. Trying to leave on an up note, you know?
Well, okay. All right. That's fine. So, yeah, Captain Mercury Productions, that's my studio where I kind of live by day. And that's where I do voiceover and advertising and web trailers and audiobooks and all kind of stuff for things that you would expect, like banks and Beamers and insurance companies and health clubs. But when the sun goes down and things turn scary, that's when the Voice from Hell takes over.
Do you have more fun doing the Voice from Hell, or do you just like the separation? You have like fun doing your other gigs? Is it kind of an even mix, or do you kind of would prefer if you could make twice the money doing haunt voiceovers? You do that full time.
Well, I don't know if I'll make twice the money doing haunt voiceovers, but I certainly have twice the fun. You know, I love to bring what I know about advertising and marketing from the daytime world into the darkness.
You worked in commercial radio for, you know, a year or two?
For six months or 20 years, one of the two. I can't really remember, yeah. But did that, then left, started my own shop, and eventually the dark voices decided they wanted to claim half my brain, and that's what they've done.
So you've been, Voice from Hell has been around for how many years?
Like 7-8 years is when voicefromhell.com first got launched, and that's when I started...
Stalking the cons, lurking around.
But you know what? They let me come back. So it's their own damn fault.
And now you're like a big deal. You know, they come in, you'll do your seminars and stuff like that, and they make money off you because they love that.
Well, that's okay. I don't mind if they make money, but what I would rather have happen, and that's, you know, really the whole reason behind the Marketing Morgue segment, is I want haunters to make money off of it. I want to help everybody do what we do better as a business.
You know, you have to spend money to make money, and you have to spend your money wisely so you can make more money.
Exactly.
You can just throw your money away and get no return on your investment, or you could spend your money and invest in someone that really knows the business, understands what it takes to catch the audience. And that's what you do. That's your thing. And you know, it's not just enough to be able to put some commercials together. But I understand how valuable what you bring to the table is, because you're bringing this expertise. You're bringing a marketing and advertising perspective. You're saying, what do we need to do to grab them by the throat within the first 5 seconds of a commercial and bring them through the gate to pay their money? And that's really what I sense that you bring to the table. I've used so much of your segment for my other businesses that are absolutely not haunt related, but I've taken the little pearls of wisdom that you've thrown into the Marketing Morgue. I've applied them to my repair business, and it's been working great. So,
and the funny thing is, over the past couple of years, I have heard that story many times from other people. And, you know, maybe they're haunters on the side, but they've also got daytime jobs, and they listen to the Marketing Morgue as well. And they say, oh, you know what? We need to analyze our strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and threats. And we need to find out what our brand is. And we need to do this market research. And I'm so glad that, like you, they were able to pull that out of the morgue.
Yeah, because it's really universal. These are all basic truths that you can use across the spectrum, no matter what kind of business you're in.
Well, you know what? Most haunters are great builders. They're great designers. And that's the way they start. But they're not necessarily great business people when they start. So if I can bring some of that to the table, let's do it.
What was your first haunt? I mean, you are now involved with, I think, the the Darkwoods Walk, if it's called that anymore.
The Dark Walk, yeah.
The Dark Walk. Okay. Before that, was that your first involvement with a haunt, or did you see something as a kid?
Oh, no. When I was a kid, really the first time I acted in a haunt was when my dad and his Sertoma Club decided that they were going to do a haunted house as a fundraiser. And so, of course, my brother and I were both recruited, and I really just caught the bug. I mean, from the moment I saw my dad make a severed hand move across the floor with nothing more than eye hooks and fishing line, I couldn't get enough.
So your dad, was he into it, or did he just do it because it was part of the fundraiser?
Well, you see, my dad was sneaky that way because he was into it, but he never let us know that he was into it. That way, we wouldn't say, ah, it's something dad likes. We don't want to get involved with that. He just did it. I subsequently found out that he used to do this like in his garage when he was a kid. He would create his own haunts, and he would have the neighborhood kids come over, and he would blindfold them. And they would stick their hands in the jar of eyeballs and the jar of worms and all of that stuff. Like, you know, really, really old school stuff. And it just carried over into his adult life. And then he infected me with it. And now I'm hopefully doing the same with my children.
How did you become a Scream Team member? How did that all begin? I think, did I just run into you at HauntCon? I was out in Pittsburgh, and I remember we were talking. You just subscribed to HauntCast. It was some post on Twitter. You were like, I give in to this barrage of non-stop barrage of minions. I give in, and I bought a subscription. And I remember thinking, holy shit, Dictor Hume bought a subscription? I felt legitimate almost. And then it was a couple weeks later, I think, where you were at HauntCon, and then I bumped into you. You were walking by and we were talking, and I said something about the show, and you were like, yeah, well, what's not to like? And I didn't associate the fact that you actually listened to the show seriously. Well, maybe you didn't listen seriously. You just listened.
Yeah, it's really hard to listen seriously to a podcast. I mean, really.
So I remember saying something to you about it. Then you responded as if you're like, yeah, I listen to it all the time. What's not to like? And I was like, Dictor Hume just kind of compliment our show somehow. And then I followed up with a couple of days later of, hey, did you think you'd be interested in doing a segment on the show? And then when you actually said you would, I was like, what?
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it happened. I mean, I remember when the whole resurrection campaign was starting up, and I thought,
I know you couldn't get away from it. You were like, no, stop it. Stop it.
It was inescapable. It just seemed like a natural progression, you know, that this was a segment that was missing. It's now, like we plugged a hole or something.
Yeah, no, ba-dum-bum.
I can't imagine not being part of this family. You know, every time we get together on the show.
At the risk of your own career.
Exactly, you know, I'll even put that on the line.
The risk of your own credibility. Why are you doing this to yourself?
No, it's always been a positive experience for me, and it always makes me smile when somebody says, hey, you remember a couple months ago when you said on HauntCast XYZ, I have a question about that. And, you know, I love that people listen that intently and that they have that much passion and devotion for the whole show, not just my segment.
So what will you miss most?
Your smiling face.
Aww. My vertical smile.
No, I think what I will miss most is just the fact of the program. But I can honestly say I've always thought of HauntCast as you know, as being like Christopher Lee in a Hammer Dracula film. You can drive a stake in him. You can put him out in the sunlight. You can put a sword in him. You can bury him under 6 inches of ice. He just keeps coming back. So I have great faith.
Don't start talking about another resurrection or
that in one form or another.
Don't start talking about
will
that.
Live on.
It was an honor serving with you, my friend.
The honor and pleasure have been all mine as well, and I thank you for bringing me into this dysfunctional family.
We will catch you around the nether realm.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing HauntCast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.